RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome back to another edition of the MMA Report Podcast. We are presented by Roman. We have got a ton to get into you here on this episode of the podcast. We will take a, you know, one of the popular shows, especially in the pro wrestling world that I've had a chance to check out is, I believe it's called Dark Side of the Ring. We're going to play a little Dark Side of the Cage. What stories would we love to hear a part of that fictional show, meaning Dark Side of the Cage. Also, we'll talk about the Bellator Bantamweight Division, the tournament that does appear is coming our way. Plus, we'll get you ready for this week's UFC Vegas number 28, the return of the Ultimate Fighter, and Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley, August 28th. We will talk about that boxing match. But Daniel, you had your own little match this past weekend. So how are we feeling a couple days after your hardcore wrestling match?
You know, I'm feeling all right. I'm really grateful that we are out here talking in my house and not in a hospital bed. I'm very grateful for that. But, you know, it was a great experience aside from, you know, being introduced to a table and some Legos and a toilet seat as well. But, I'm hanging in there, Jason. I'm feeling good, though. There's something about going out there doing well. And I kind of have a high, but it's back to normal. You get humbled real quick when after you do that, you go to your normal 9-to-5 job.
Yeah, I saw the video. You sent it to me. It was, pure. There was some good comedy, especially from the fans. The one woman who's begging your opponent to hit her with the chair. I was dying laughing.
Oh, yeah. To me, it's all about you got to have the fans to make it go or else, you know, you're in a lot of trouble. And I was really grateful to have just a great bunch of fans in there. I think it helped out that we had a battle royal. And so just every wrestler probably brought 5 family members. So it was a packed house, you know, largely because we had 20 guys in a battle royal. But when you have a bunch of people in the stands drinking beer because it was at a brewery, I lucked into a really awesome crowd, but absolutely that old lady takes the cake. But I am grateful to be here in one piece. You know, it's usually when people start things off, they start things off and they're wrestling real slow. But nope, hardcore match straight away.
Yeah, I will tell you, I enjoyed the weekend off. You know, it was no MMA going on, so I took the weekend off. Me and my wife, we went over to Orlando and hung out over there. And very interesting to kind of see how life in Orlando is at this point in terms of the fact that essentially it's the honor policy, whether you're going to wear a mask or not. So not much mask work going on.
I believe, Florida to me, I think y'all take the cake. Florida and Texas take the cake for just off with the mask. But, you know, people are getting vaccinated. You know, I feel like if you want one, you already got one. And hopefully the numbers continue to go up. Yours truly has got 2 shots in me. And my area in particular is higher than most areas in the state. I think largely due to the fact that my area had, like, an incredible amount of cases. But yeah, it does seem like life is really getting back to normal. I mean, realistically, where I'm at, you only see people wear masks inside of, like, stores, like grocery stores, you know. But bars, you know, restaurants, stuff like that, not so much. And it's nice to slowly but surely get back in the swing of things. And you know, from my point of view, you know, I saw the AEW pay-per-view, and they were just a full house. And that represented a real return to normalcy. Of course, you've also got some really loud crowds in the NBA playoffs. Obviously, some of those fans are acting ridiculous. I think the UFC fans, man, we can really hold ourselves up high because we haven't had any controversies, really, from fan to fighter interactions, whereas the NBA fans are just acting like criminals out here, literally.
Yeah, I would tell you, it's been weird turning on NBA, NHL playoffs and these full houses. It's just like you forget. We talked about this a couple weeks ago when, you know, the UFC had that first show in front of fans. Of you just kind of forget about what fans do bring to a sporting event. And it's you know, it's been interesting to kind of see how all this plays out and more fans. You know, I think for the Tampa Bay Lightning, when they return home here for game three later on this week, I want to say it's going to be 13,500, I want to say. So I know Carolina, I think Carolina's full capacity. I think they're gone 100% in there. But you brought an interesting topic to me to bring up here. Of course, talk about the dark side of the ring. Great show that you watch on Vice, isn't it? It's Vice, right?
Yeah, it's Vice. It's a Vice documentary, and then they also spinned it off this current year with a Dark Side of Football. So it's a documentary style series that Vice is starting to milk for all it's worth, because the pro wrestling documentaries that started off with one on Bruiser Brody, they've really taken off. You know, there's been one on Chris Benoit this year. There's one on Brian Pillman, one on a hardcore wrestler named Nick Gage. And for those that are fans of pro wrestling, and even those that aren't, that documentary has really been quite popular. And it's only a matter of time, I think, until we get a Dark Side of Mixed Martial Arts.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to call it Dark Side of the Cage. And when you brought this up, and I initially started thinking about, man, what would be the stories? The first one that immediately came to my mind was the end of the Bjorn Rebney era in Bellator and transitioning over to Scott Coker. Look, I will tell you, throughout the years, have I heard stories? Yes, I've heard stories. But it's also like, when I think of these stories, like, I don't want it told like the end of the Bjorn era, beginning of the Scott Coker era, I don't want it be told by Viacom. I want it to be told by somebody independent. It's like, you know, if there was a UFC documentary, it's on ESPN Plus, I just know it's going to be a UFC spin to the story. So my number one was the end of Bjorn Rebney and Scott Coker. There's two other ones I have, but let me throw it over to you for one of your options.
Well, I'll say that's a really good one that you have. And I think out of all six of our options, that's probably the best choice when it comes to learning more information about something we don't know. I think a lot of our choices will be things we know a lot about that are controversial and would be interesting to relive. Whereas this one, there's a lot of info out there that you can dig to put a spotlight on. I mean, that was Bjorn's baby that he no longer was in possession of. And so I think that would be an interesting one. For number three, I'm going to go with something really old school that I think touches on a lot of things, and it's going to be UFC 12. So UFC 12 was supposed to be in New York, and this coincides with John McCain really ripping it into the UFC and politically battling the sport of mixed martial arts. So you can touch on that. But UFC 12 ends up not being able to run in New York, so they move to Oregon. Then they can't do the show in Oregon. I think within like a one-day period, they pack up shop and they go to Alabama to run that card. So I think telling that story would be interesting. That, to me, is what's interesting. And then a couple of things you can add on top of it. You have Vitor Belfort making a name for himself, winning the four-man heavyweight tournament. You have Mark Coleman and Dan Severn for the heavyweight championship, I believe. And lastly, it's the first ever appearance for Joe Rogan on a UFC broadcast. So those things are the cherries on top. But I think this specific event would do a great way of covering the initial controversy, which was the sport itself and how it had to battle to be legitimized and to even put on a show in this country not that long ago.
Yeah, no, it really wasn't that long ago. My number two, the rise and fall of Chuck Liddell.
Ooh, that's a good one. What would you want in that?
I mean, think about this, okay? So, obviously, I'm a little older than you. I remember going out for the early on Chuck and Tito fights. There was, like, when we talked about Conor McGregor being a massive star, that was Chuck Liddell. I remember being at a, and there's certain memories you have in this sport where you always remember where you were. And one of those for me is the night Rampage Jackson beat Chuck Liddell, which I believe we just came up on the 13-year anniversary of that fight. And I remember being in a bar, Daniel, when Rampage knocked him out, you could have heard a pin drop in this place. It went utterly silent.
I believe it. It was kind of like the Iceman got shattered And that wasn't the only time he got shattered. You know, he had so many fights after that where his jaw was exposed and he was losing fights you wouldn't expect. And a guy who was literally at the pinnacle of this sport was quickly, you know, having embarrassing loss after embarrassing loss. And unfortunately, you can look at all the all-time greats in this sport, and for the vast majority of them, they're going to have that fall, whether it be Ronda Rousey or Anderson Silva or Tito Ortiz or Randy Couture. They all have that fault, even Brock Lesnar. So I think that's a good one. Man, I kind of wanted to do a Tank Abbott documentary, but I didn't make my top three. I think he would be an interesting topic. But also sticking to that time period, more of an obscure guy, a really bad guy in Joe Sun, who's in prison, I think, for like, I think it was gang rape in the 90s is why he got in prison, and then he killed an inmate. So you have the criminal aspect of that, just a bad dude. But his competitive mixed martial arts career was insane. Like, he debuted in UFC, and he just hit a dude in the balls. Like, that was his attack, groin strikes, against, like, I want to say Keith Hackney, where he was just punching him in the balls. Joe Sun looks ridiculous, too. He's just a chubby dude just in a UFC tournament. He's also – you also get a little bit of Kimo Leopoldo because he was in his corner. I believe Kimo and Joe Sun also got into a post-fight brawl with somebody. Joe Sun also competed in Pride in a leopard thong where you just see his butt cheeks. This dude was insane. This dude was a very bad guy. But the story itself is pretty dang, like, he kind of, it's like car crash TV where you can't keep your eyes off it. And it's also a topic where maybe it's not overly covered, and for good reason, because again, Joe Sun is kind of a scum. Absolutely a scum. But I would put Joe Sun as my number two.
All right, my number three is a story that's kind of been told in various different ways, more in a very short form. We saw it was told a little bit in the Chronicles on UFC Fight Pass of Kimbo Slice. But to me, the night Seth Petruzzelli beat Kimbo Slice, I think if you got some, whether, you know, it's you know, Seth, people around Kimbo that were there that night, I just think that would be an interesting of, could you really get into exactly everything that happened that led up to Seth knocking out Kimbo? Because I remember where I was that night. Daniel, I was not watching it.
Yeah.
I was at Disney World with my, I want to say it was my nephew. And we were there for Halloween, Disney's Not So Scary Halloween. And I remember getting a text from a buddy goes, "You're not going to believe this. Kimbo just got knocked out."
That's a good call, man. That really is a good call. And the thing is, that result probably killed Elite XC. Mm-hmm. Like that one result led to the demise of a mixed martial arts promotion that was on network television. That is a good call. I think that absolutely makes the cut. You could go with just a straight up Kimbo duck. I mean, you could do his fight with Donna 5000 as well. I mean, that was scary, but I think that's a good call. Another one that didn't make my list, but absolutely could, would be the Strikeforce Nashville brawl. I think that's something that absolutely could. But for my number one, I think a documentary that Dark Side of the Cage could really build their season around. And we've already seen a documentary on this man, but he's worth remembering. He's a former middleweight champion. He's Evan Tanner, you know, who passed away way too early. And his story is an incredibly sad one, but he was a very important figure in this sport. And I do think the Evan Tanner Dark Side of the Cage would be, you know, a great choice for this hypothetical thing. And again, this is a guy who's a former champ.
I just thought of another one. I'll throw out there as an honorable mention, just came to my mind as you were talking. How about the battle the UFC had to get MMA legalized in New York and the political aspect of it?
I think that would be absolutely great. And when you talk about battles, I think another one would be Chael Sonnen's battle with in court. I mean, that was a whole fiasco, and that would be interesting to relive. And that was crazy, that whole situation. I mean, that was an absurd deal. I remember when we were just watching these things and how crazy it was. I think that would absolutely be a good one as well. I mean, there's so many. I mean, there's some really dark topics. I mean, there's topics that I wouldn't even want to see. Like, I wouldn't want to see a war machine one. But that is a very dark topic, very controversial topic. I mean, you could get into some of the Ultimate Fighter guys who ended up, you know, fizzling out, like Junie Browning. You know, Chris Lieben would also be someone who would be very interesting. Hell, you could even do one on Diego Sanchez and his former BFF. I won't even say his name. You could do one on Dana White and, the whole Sherdog controversy with the documentary. Oh, man, I can't remember what it was.
Are you thinking about when, for the Ultimate Fighter 4?
They spoiled
it. Josh Gross and they spoiled it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You could do something on that. You know, Dana White's early mess ups with the media where he called Loretta Hunt a homophobic slur. I mean, there is a lot of craziness that happened in that era of the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can go down the storyline of how much Dana White controls, how the MMA media does its job.
Yeah, White versus the media.
I mean, there's plenty of storylines there. But, like, I do feel like this is – I would have to imagine that the people that are behind Dark Side are could be looking at mixed martial arts going, man, there is some stories. I think it ultimately just comes down to could you get the people to kind of tell the story. You know, on Sunday's podcast, I had Danny Sabatello on the show talking about his Bellator 259 win. And there's been so much talk that the Bantamweight is going to be the next Grand Prix for Bellator. You know, it was not that long ago that it was going to be women's flyweight. Then that got passed up, you know, and now it looks like it's going to get passed up once again, men's Bantamweight. And I threw this one out there, and I don't know how you could make this work in terms of, you know, a proper tournament and giving fighters a proper time to prepare for a fight. But how about if you did a 10-fighter field and the last two spots are fight-in spots? So just kind of like what we saw in the NBA playoffs, the 7, 8, 9 seed got to fight their way into the tournament.
You know, that's an interesting idea, and I'm picking up what you're throwing down because this is a pretty good bantamweight roster that they have. I mean, it's probably one of the deeper weight classes in Bellator. And when you look at the list of guys, you have a real argument to be made to be included in a bantamweight tournament. It's not just 8. It's 10 or 12. And so I think 10 is a great number. You could realistically do a 16-man tournament, but that just seems stressful for the promoter, and you probably wouldn't want to do that, right? You wouldn't want to be like, Sergio Pettis, you got to defend your title 4 times. Like, it's not going to work out. So I do think, all right, you're like Pettis, Archuleta, Pashy Mix, Magomedov, Higo, I don't know, Gallagher. You're all in the tournament. Because, of course, James Gallagher is going to get in the tournament. He doesn't need to do the fight in because he's the star, right? He's the guy we're babying. And then you put, like, Josh Hill, Darren. I mean, you could, man, if you put Josh Hill, Darren Caldwell, Stouts, and Sabatello in, you still have some good guys who aren't making the cut. You know, that's 10 names already.
Yeah, so I went onto the Bellator rankings portal that I log into to submit my rankings. We have 22 fighters that we can currently vote on at 135 pounds. Sergio Pettis, Juan Archuleta, Pachy Mitch, Magomedov, Rafion Stotts, Leandro Higo, James Gallagher, Josh Hill, Jornel Lugo, Cass Bell, Darren Caldwell, Brett Johns, Danny Sabatello, Jalen Bates, Johnny Campbell, Henry Corrales, CJ Hamilton, Keith Lee, Matthias Matos, Brian Moore, Albert Morales, and Eric Perez. Now, I mean, look, there's some fighters that got to be in this tournament. Obviously, the champion, Pettis, the former champion, Archuleta, Pachy Mix, Magomed has got to be in there. Stouts has got to be in there. Josh Hill's got to be in there. I think Danny Sabatello has got to be in there with that win over Brett Johns. I think you got to put Brett Johns in there. Gallagher is going to get in there because of his name value. Higo's got to go in there, but if you're Bellator, you're concerned whether or not he can make weight. I mean, Darren Caldwell, the former champion. That's why it's. I don't know if 16 is the right number, but I kind of feel like is like if you want to try to create some intrigue in this, why not have some fight in aspect of it?
Exactly, I think that's the right call, and it speaks to the roster where Darren Caldwell, the former champ, finds himself in a play-in situation. That's how deep 135 is. So, yeah, I think when you get 16, it gets stretched a little too thin. And so I like what you're saying. I think at the end of the day, though, if I had to give you a prediction on what Bellator does, I think they're going to play it safe. I think they're going to do an eight-man tournament just because that's what has worked well. You just have those reserve fights, right? You have the guys who didn't make the cut. But it would be a rough stuff if you have a tournament, you know, and you don't put Josh Hill in there or you don't put Darren Caldwell in there. So I think that's why the 10-man tournament definitely makes the most sense. But, yeah, I mean, it's something that I would very much look forward to. I think you can make the case that Leandro Higo might not make the cut just because he can't make that weight cut, as you mentioned. But overall, man, I mean, I am hyped about the idea of this tournament. I mean, this is a tournament where Magomedov could end up with the championship when it's all said and done. You know, this is a very, very, very good tournament where you have a guy, again, like Darren Caldwell on the outside looking in. I know things have not gone right for him, but he's lost close fights. And he has the talent level to get that strap. So I'm ready. Whether it be 8, 10, 12, or 16, sign me up for a 135-pound tournament. I'm glad this is the weight class they're doing it in. It makes the most sense.
Well, think about this. If you did the top 8 right now at 135 pounds, this is what it would be based on the rankings. Sergio Pettis, Juan Archuleta, Patchy Mix, Magomedov, Rafion Stouts, Leandro Higo, James Gallagher, Josh Hill. That would be your 8 guys. That means missing out would be Jornel Lugo, Darian Caldwell, Danny Sabatello, Brett Johns.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, good guys are going to miss out even if it's a 10-man tournament. So, but once you get to a 12-man, then it's just like you might as well do 16, right? Like, once you go to 12, you have half the field doing a play-in. Yeah, so that's why the 10 is the right mix.
And the weird thing is with having the champion in there, that means the champion's defending the belt every time. So it's like you can't do kind of that true 1 versus 16 or, you know, 1 versus 8 type matchup. You know, that's where it becomes kind of weird. It's good. I think it's good and bad because it does allow Bellator to kind of make the matchups. Also, by the way, the guy I did not mention who you know would be in the tournament, Koji Horiguchi.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, that puts someone. I mean, that then at that point, Kyoji Horiguchi, who would absolutely be a part of that first six. I mean, that literally puts. I think that puts Stouts out or Gallagher. Like that puts one of them out.
To me, it's easy. Gallagher goes out.
Yeah, I mean Gallagher would go out, but so you'd have Stouts, Magomedov, Horiguchi, Mix, Archuleta, Pettis, top six, Gallagher, Josh Hill, Higo, Caldwell, John Sabatello, you'd have to cut two of those to do a play-in.
Look, at the end of the day, it gives Bellator a lot of options for alternates.
That's for darn sure. The alternate fights would be must-watch TV. The alternate fights would be damn good fights.
Yeah, it's just crazy. You know, it's really interesting of, and I think Bellator and, you know, Rich Chow deserves a lot of credit when he was the matchmaker, Mike Kogan, Scott Coker, everyone there at Talent Relations deserves a lot of credit of how they have built up this 135-pound division over the last 2 years. I mean, you think about where this division was 2 years ago. I don't know if they had 10 fighters in the division 2 years ago. And they really have done things. I mean, and this is an organization that, by the way, they could have signed Aljamain Sterling a couple years ago, and they passed.
Big mistake there to pass on to Aljo. But you're totally right. I mean, and a lot of this has been interior development. I mean, there's obviously Sergio Pettis, former UFC guy, Horiguchi, former UFC guy. Otherwise, most of these guys are internally developed within Bellator. You know, it's pretty damn impressive when you look at it. I mean, there are still plenty of guys with at least one or two UFC fights under their belt or having competed on the Ultimate Fighter. But overall, when you look at the depth of this weight class and then guys we haven't even mentioned like CJ Hamilton and Keith Lee, and these are solid talents. And this speaks to going out, scouting, and signing good guys and giving them an opportunity to develop. And that's been the MO for a successful organization if you're not the UFC. This is how you get things done. And you plant the seeds and years later they sprout and you are now having an embarrassment of riches when you're trying to put together a bracket.
Yeah, it's interesting to kind of see how Bellator does this and what the timeline will potentially be for when they could put together this bantamweight tournament. Of course, before we get into our next topic, do want to let you know this episode of the MMA Report podcast is presented by Roman. Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes three-putt with a tournament on the line. So if you feel like you come up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport now.
With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. You just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it.
As you heard Daniel say, go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport now to get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Get started now to save $15 off your first month of treatment. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Now, Daniel, before we get into UFC Vegas number 28 this week, we're actually recording this here on Tuesday afternoon. And on Tuesday night will be the premiere of the Ultimate Fighter Season 29. We got bantamweights and middleweights. I talked about this a little bit on Sunday's podcast. I will definitely watch episode one, but I have not actively watched a season of the Ultimate Fighter since the ATT Black Zillion season, which I think was season 21, 22, so somewhere in that range. It's just a show that has just not intrigued me. Now, I'll go back and watch the fights that take place on it, but I could really care less about the reality show aspect of this. And like, it's one of those things of I'm intrigued to watch it to see if anything has changed about the show, but I'm not expecting. I feel like this is going to be the same old Ultimate Fighter that we've seen for 28 other seasons.
Yeah, I totally 100% agree with you. I mean, to me, I don't know how this is going to be anything different, but I will absolutely give the first episode a look because, you know, it's been a while. I kind of wish Max Holloway was a coach just because I love listening to Max Holloway talk. But regardless, Volkanovski and Ortega will be very interesting. I think Ortega will be the coach to keep an eye on when it comes to just doing outrageous things. I think he has a very, very, very fun disposition. I think he has a lot of talent in the bantamweight bracket. Josh Rendenhouse is a veteran. That is the guy you got to keep an eye on. And I think Daniel Argueta is a name to watch for a possible tournament winner. That's a guy who's a pretty big-time prospect that I think could already be in the UFC. And I think it sets up for him to possibly win the bantamweight tournament. The middleweight tournament looks good, too. But I'm more so excited about 135. But, you know, I'll give it a watch just because it has been a while. But, I mean, the Ultimate Fighter really hasn't meant anything since, like, ATT versus the Black Zillion season. I mean, and that's been a long time. So we shall see. I mean, to me, the big storyline coming out of the Ultimate Fighter is Alexander Volkanovski dropping on his social media that he's still possibly having a hard time with his workouts, and he doesn't know if it's due to COVID or if it's just due to the weather.
Yeah, that's there's plenty of stories out there. The man at bantamweight that I think you need to remember his name, Mitch Raposo.
Yeah, he's undefeated too, right?
Yeah, this is a guy that really he can be a 125er, he could be a 135er. You know, when there was all that talk about the UFC getting rid of 125, him and his team had basically started making a plan of changing his strength and conditioning to go to 35. But I remember the last time I talked to him, this was well before this came up, he was like, look, he goes, I can fight at 25. I can fight at 35. To me, he's a guy to pay attention to there at 35. Dustin Lampros is also another fighter to pay attention to. Trains out of Sanford MMA down in South Florida. Raposo, to me, is a guy that I have interest most at bantamweight. At middleweight, I spoke to Cameron Lashinoff. Man, crazy man. This is, for those who don't remember, he is the fighter. You remember in Bellator when he was telling the guy to hit him in the face and the guy threw a punch, hit him, and like he was like, is that all you got? That's Cameron Lashinoff.
Sign me up for that. I want to see what he does in the cage, and Yeah, I mean, I think he's probably got the most experience out of anyone in that middleweight bracket too.
Yeah, the thing with him though is anyone that's going to go up against him, they're going to try to grapple him. You know, that Cameron wants to stand and trade. So he's definitely. I saw some people that I respect talking about Trayshawn Gore as another fighter there at 185 pounds. But look, I'm going to give the show a shot. I'm expecting that it's going to be the same old Ultimate Fighter. I'm not expecting a ton of difference, but I'm going to give it a shot. Like, I've seen people in the MMA community that have talked about they're excited for the return of the Ultimate Fighter. I'm just like, why?
Yeah, I would be surprised if those same people are still talking about the Ultimate Fighter on episode 4. Is this going to be on TV or is this only on Fight Pass? I mean, excuse me, only on ESPN Plus.
ESPN Plus. So it is. So as we're doing this, the show obviously comes out Wednesday, but it'll be on Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time.
Only on ESPN Plus.
As far as I know, yeah. I would have to think they put it on ESPN, ESPN2 at some point, you would think.
I would hope so, because that to me, that's the whole point of the Ultimate Fighter, is to be on TV. The whole point of the Ultimate Fighter is to be on TV, so a casual fan stumbles upon it, they watch it, and they get hooked on the sport. Not the other way around. Not you're a hardcore fan and you watch The Ultimate Fighter and, you know, it's content for you. The Ultimate Fighter, which literally saved the UFC that first season, that's the whole point. So I hope it makes its way to ESPN.
I would tell you one of the downsides, outside of the fact that it locks fighters into contracts for a very long time, is the fact of if you do something crazy, that stigma will never leave you. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. Someone that I've talked to many a times, Maurice Greene. Everyone just thinks of Maurice Greene as a guy smoking cigarettes and drinking. When he stopped smoking cigarettes, I think like 2 years ago. But yeah, People still view him in that light.
Well, yeah, and you know, one of the key stories that we would get on The Ultimate Fighter, especially when I was watching it, would be the person who doesn't make weight. You know, the person who quits in the sauna, which has not aged well when you look at some of the problems we've had with weight cutting. But the TV show would like shame them. You know, Dana White would come in and berate them. And I, you know, but the thing is, that was one of the key ingredients of the show, would be Dana White coming in and bitching out the fighters. I mean, will we get that this season? I don't think so. But that to me is what makes the Ultimate Fighter the Ultimate Fighter, is like somebody screwed up, Dana White comes over and he does it. I mean, to me, some of the most interesting things about the Ultimate Fighter is when the guys got in shenanigans outside of the cage. You know, that's what made some of those first few seasons riveting reality show trash TV. And I think it's just hard to get there again because no one wants to be Junie Browning.
No, no one wants to be Julian Lane. Let me bang, bro.
Exactly. I mean, that is literally Julian Lane. That's you say Julian Lane, that's all you think of. Yeah. Let me bang, bro. I mean, it's insane. It is absolutely insane. But we see it time and again. But I mean, you know, I have real nostalgia for it. I mean, it introduced us to so many people. It introduced us to Nate Diaz, Matt Riddle, Kenny Florian, Diego Sanchez, Rashad, Sarah. The list goes on, but you know, the past 10 to 15 seasons have had great fighters who have had great UFC careers, but it hasn't really resonated with people the same way that first batch has. And again, I'm surprised that Ultimate Fighter got out of the grave. It just, to me, is just content for the sake of content.
Yeah, I don't think Dana White will ever let Tough die. I just don't think he can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so either. But I think the coaches is something that would get people to watch. This combination of Volkanovski and Ortega is not doing it for me. Or they're both fine athletes. They're both interesting. But it's going to have to take a radical combination of coaches to get people to watch. And, I mean, we've even had a Conor McGregor season, right?
Yeah.
And that season really didn't matter either way. I mean, to me, the last season that really mattered, that people watched, in my opinion, that people talked about, was the Kimbo Slice season. That was like the 10th season.
Correct. It was the last season on Spike, as I recall.
Yeah. That was the last season people cared, in my opinion.
No. Was that the last season on Spike?
I don't know. I really know.
It was towards the end. If it wasn't the last one, it was one of the last ones. Because I remember, you know, that kind of like iconic scene of Kimbo walking in. And, you know, that's one of those shows that I'm sure they wish that Kimbo would not have been the first fight.
Yeah. They probably should have waited to have him be at least the last of the first round to milk those ratings. But I mean, it was still an enjoyable season. You had Meathead. You had Brendan Schaub, you know. It was a good little season, but yeah, that was a big mistake to do that. I mean, they should just told the coaches, like, hey, this fight's not happening. It's like the Bachelorette, when they don't let the guy kick the contestant off like that. You know, you gotta milk, keep it. And that's insane that it was the first fight.
Yeah, I just feel like if you're a manager, you would rather get your guy on the Contender Series because, you know, then there's not a camera in your fighter's face for 6 weeks of, you know, if you do anything stupid, it's going to be on camera and it's never. But even though it does sound like that this year's Contender Series is going to have more of an international flair to it going forward. And a lot of that really has to do with the fact of, you know, they really couldn't build their international fighter base during COVID because of all the restrictions. I know I saw Ariel Helwani was tweeting today about how they were looking to go August the 14th in England, but it's, you know, looking as the days go by that's probably not going to happen. And, you know, Dana White's made it clear he wants to get back to a traveling world. He wants to do that. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that does happen, especially when we talk about international events. Of course, the UFC does have a card coming up on Saturday. And Daniel, it's not a sexy card. I mean, it's, I will tell you, there is one matchup that sticks out above every other matchup. It's not the main event. It's not the co-main event. It's not even the third to last fight on the card. For me, it's Santiago Ponzinibbio versus Miguel Baeza. How does Ponzinibbio bounce back? Miguel Baeza, like, this to me is kind of like, in a way, old school UFC match where you got the young up and coming fighter, Miguel Baeza, very fun, exciting fighter to watch. Ponzinibbio, who, I mean, he's had some injury situation over the past couple of years, and we saw what happened there against Neil Magny. Like, to me, that's like the one fight that really ultimately draws me to the television set on Saturday night.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. That's the best fight, and it's not even close. It's a great opportunity for Baeza because Santiago still has that name value, but we still have no idea if we're going to see the old version of Ponzinibbio. I mean, he went through some crazy health situation, and now, you know, he was on top of the world and now no longer. And, this is a great opportunity for Baeza to win. That's a great fight. And not only that, it's also probably going to be entertaining, which is not something you can say for a lot of these other fights. There's a possibility, you know, in the night's main event that Jair Rozenstruik goes in there, gets a first round knockout, or Augusto Sakai finishes Rozenstruik. But there's a great possibility this is like a replay of Gagne and Rozenstruik. You know, that fight sucked. That surreal fight versus Jair. I mean, that was a boring fight, and it could absolutely be boring. We can see a lot of clinch work from Augusto Sakai. Walt Harris, Tibera could end in the first round and could go three rounds and be boring too. Man, yeah, this card sucks. Like, this is a really bad welcome back. Like, we had a week off, and it's like, man, you might as well have taken that second week off. No offense to the fighters in the card, it just isn't doing it for me. And, I, you know, we'll have stuff to talk about. You know, there are interesting fighters. You know, anytime I can watch Tom Breeze fight, I'm excited for it. Marco Amir Khan is also pretty darn talented. Ilir Latifi sneakily on this card, taking on Tanner Boser. But overall, you just don't have too many fighters that have a lot of momentum. It's a lot of fighters looking to turn it around. And that's why this card isn't too exciting. But, you know, on cards like these, usually you will have 2 to 4 different fighters that make a standout performance, and that will give us something to talk about next week.
You know, when I look at the main event, and you broke it down there perfectly, to me, if you're Jairo Rozenstruik, to me, it's about keeping range in this fight and not allowing it to pinch, whether it's Sakai trying to get the fight to the ground or making this kind of a dirty boxing-type clinch fest against a cage. That, to me, is something to pay attention to there. Also, I will say, though, even though he lost his UFC debut. Mason Jones, 10-1 on the prelims, taking on Alan Patrick. Mason Jones, I think, is someone else to pay attention to. How does he bounce back after his loss there? Gregor Rodriguez, who just won the middleweight title in LFA, getting a win there over Josh Frem. He's stepping up here on short notice to take on Dusko. That's another one. Like, it's overall, like, yeah, it's when we have a week without a UFC, you come back, it doesn't have a ton of those sexy matchups. I will tell you, like, I know both of these guys. I think it's a very odd matchup between Sean Woodson and Yusuf Zalal. Yusuf Zalal is, I would call him, a undersized guy at 145 pounds, and he's taking on a tall and lanky guy in Sean Woodson. When I saw that a couple weeks ago, that match, I was like, it's kind of a weird stylistic matchup. I mean, I think the thought process is with there with the UFC that these two guys are going to stand up on the feet. But yeah, there's not Marquand Amir Khani is always kind of a fun, guy to watch fight, but there's just not a ton that sits there and goes, okay, I got to be in front of the television set or in front of the computer on Saturday afternoon when this card starts at 4 p.m. Eastern time with the prelims.
Yeah, simply put, this is just a UFC card that doesn't have like a steak dinner, right? This is just a bunch of little sides, but there isn't something juicy. There isn't a combination of two or three fights on this main card that is must-see TV. I mean, Augustus Sakai is in your main event. That's just not good. If Augustus Sakai was a free agent and signed by Bellator, he would not be in a Bellator main event, I don't think, unless it was a heavyweight title fight. But, yeah, I mean, the other guy I think is kind of interesting is Jordan Leavitt. Last time we saw him, he took out Matt Wyman with the slam, and dude's undefeated. He's taking on Claudio Puelles on the prelims. So, there are talented guys, but again, there just isn't that fight that brings you to the TV screen. This could be a redemption. This could be a shot in the arm for Jair Rozenstruik, who, when he is firing all cylinders, is must-see TV. He can be damn exciting. Just the flip side is when he's not able to land that big shot, we get really boring outings like we last saw, but we've also seen this guy go out there and destroy legends like Junior Dos Santos.
The crazy thing about Jordan Leavitt, I'll never forget, and this was after he won on the Contender Series, getting to the UFC, and he's telling me about how he has never lifted a weight. And how he has been just getting into the PEI, learning his strength and conditioning program, which I bring that up to bring up a conversation that people can check out on the MMA Report YouTube channel. Peter Pettis, who's going to be fighting this week in Valor Fighting Challenge, taking on Nick Gert, as he is now moving up to 55, told me his days at 45 pounds are over. Told me a crazy story about his PFL fights, about his shoulder coming out of socket during his matchup and having to put it back in socket during the fight. But he told me, he's like, yeah, never lifted a weight before moving up to 55. That is like when I hear fighters say that, I'm like, how is this possible?
Yeah, it's like you weren't in a high school sport. Like, in high school sports, you go to the weight room.
Yeah,
that's shocking. But for him to have had this much success without having that type of training, the question is, what's going to happen now that he has something like this that's more legitimate physical training? I'm excited for his potential, absolutely, knowing that.
Yeah, it's crazy, of course. But, I mean, look, everyone's going to get ready for the pay-per-view next week. Adesanya, Vettori, the rematch. We got Figueiredo, Moreno, also a rematch. Leon Edwards, Nate Diaz is on that card. So,
Jesus.
That is going to be the card that everyone's going to be paying attention to.
Well, yeah, I think so. But, I mean, you have that one, but you also have Mayweather-Paul. So, I think Mayweather-Paul.
That's on Sunday, bro.
That's on Sunday?
That's this Sunday.
Damn. I thought that was a Saturday fight.
Man. It's a Sunday, eight round. I saw the other day that, so it's at, I think, 190 pounds, or no, 180 pounds, I think it is. And so if for every, like, I saw it was like every pound or that Logan Paul misses weight, it costs him $100,000 when he misses weight. Because, I mean, Floyd will probably weigh in like 160 for this one. Mm-hmm. And it is, I was out about at a bar on Friday night and I saw a poster that they were going to have it. I'm like, so do I come up and watch this thing?
I think that's the best way to go, right? You don't pay the pay-per-view, but you go and you have a good time with your buddies. I think that's how you got to watch this fight, because it's going to be a spectacle. We have a good 1-2 punch. We have a legitimately fight of the year, card of the year for UFC, you know, three dope fights, and then you can kind of wash it off with some empty calories. But, you know, the water cooler conversation on Monday, unfortunately, won't be this awesome UFC card. It will absolutely be Paul versus Mayweather. I'm sorry, but that's just how it's going to go. You know?
Oh yeah. No question. Like, I saw this, this tweet from Kevin Ioli. I respect Kevin a lot. And he said this, he goes, quote, "Showtime used to be a boxing network for the hardcore fans. And now it's becoming a network for YouTube boxers, SMDH, hard pass." But what's that, like, okay, I understand where Kevin's coming from, but what's it say about Showtime understanding that they believe getting in the Paul brother business is what's best for them as comparison to high level boxing matchups? I think that says something about the combat sports audience and what ultimately is bringing people to a Showtime pay-per-view.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, any channel is in one business, and that's putting more money in their bank account, and whatever they can do to put more money in their bank account, they're going to do it. That Jake Paul deal is going to put a lot of money in their bank account. Jake Paul is a huge draw. You know, him fighting Tyron Woodley is going to be a big fight. You know, Woodley's all gung-ho. He knows the score. He knows he needs to do the trash talk. Showtime obviously has a history of being the place for hardcore boxing fans, but they have bills to pay. And to get in the Jake Paul business is an opportunity that every single television channel would love to do, because it's a business that is very fruitful. At the end of the day, combat sports is about stars and pay-per-views. That's what it's about. Putting two people in the cage that generate eyeballs, generate interest. And the Paul brothers have done just that. You know, it's not every YouTube star that is this big pay-per-view draw currently. At this moment, when you look at the YouTube guys, there's only two people who are draws right now, and it's the Paul brothers. At least draws, like, for the casual fan. Obviously, you have the YouTube guys fight each other. Their hardcore base is going to buy it, and that generates money, right? The hardcore Barstool fan is going to buy Rough and Rowdy. Yeah. They have thousands of hardcore Barstool fans that are going to generate that money. But when it comes to eclipsing a million buys amongst these celebrity fights, it's not like there's a laundry list of these guys. It's one or two. Plus, you know, past their prime legends like Mike Tyson.
Yeah, so Errol Hawani had the tweet earlier today. Fight's going to be on August 28th, 190-pound bout, be a 20x20 ring, 10-ounce gloves. Jake Paul has opened up as a minus 155 betting favorite. I want to bring up this quote from Tyron Woodley and get your take on it, because I think it says a lot about MMA fighter pay. Quote, "Easiest fight of my career and biggest purse of my career all in one night. Basically, they brought me in to take out the trash. Can't wait to shut this bitch up. This is getting done for the culture, the whole MMA boxing community, to rid this guy of combat sports." Now, I saw John Nash had a tweet that for UFC 205, Tyron Woodley made $3 million.
So you think he's going to make more than $3 million?
My guess is there's probably a big guarantee in this one, plus pay-per-view points, and thinking how many pay-per-view points they can sell. Like, to me, it's kind of telling about what MMA fighter pay is. Yeah. I mean, look, I am sure there is a ton of MMA fighters that are jealous of Tyron Woodley right now. Woodley, the free agency for Tyron Woodley could not have come at a better time, because when you think about it, GSP can't get the fight against Oscar De La Hoya because he's stuck in a UFC contract. And so Woodley, it just, like, everything lined up perfectly for him. The fact of, you know, being buddy-buddy with Ben Askren, being in Atlanta for that fight, everything, it lined so perfectly for him. I mean, but, you know, but I did see someone bring this point up of, you know, in 10-ounce boxing gloves, he's going to have to throw combinations, and that's not really been Woodley's thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think – I'm not going to go into this one thinking Woodley's going to beat Jake Paul. You know, I don't know what my pick is. I really hope Woodley beats Jake Paul. But Jake Paul's taking boxing really seriously. You know, there's there's no disputing that. The way he absolutely handled Ben Askren, the way he's in shape, whereas with Woodley, he's on the clear downswing. This is no longer the UFC welterweight champion. This was the perfect time, as you mentioned, for him to be able to negotiate himself into a fight of his life, because his MMA days competing against the top welterweights is over. And it's probably nothing to do with himself. It's mostly physically the body's letting him down. So this to me sets up like a great fight for Jake Paul. It would be amazing to see Woodley win. The upside for Woodley is there's no way his loss can be as embarrassing as Ben Askren. So he's, you know, when we think of embarrassing losses to Jake Paul, we'll always think of Ben before Tyron Woodley if he loses. But I certainly hope Woodley wins. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm looking forward to just hearing different media members accidentally call him Tyrone instead of Tyron. I know that's going to happen time and again, you know, but good for Woodley to get a big paycheck. You know, that's Jake Paul is paying UFC fighters more than the promotion. And it's embarrassing that a former champion is saying that this is his biggest payday.
So I had retweeted Mike Coppinger's tweet on Monday where he had, you know, talked about, you know, his sources were telling him that the fight was, you know, a done deal. And there was someone who responded to me that said, when will this effing clown just fight a boxer? Obviously talking about Jake Paul. And it did make me think about what the commenter said there is, I wonder what is the end game for Jake Paul? What is he looking to accomplish? Is this about, okay, I'm just looking for paydays, and I look at UFC MMA fighters as a chance to be those biggest paydays? Or is his end game about becoming potentially a boxing world champion? And that's what I don't think I've ever heard him really talk about, of what is the goal here.
Well, maybe his dream is being a boxing world champion, but that's not going to happen. I think for him, the goal is financially, this is a great way for himself to make a living doing something he loves. You know, maybe one day when the time comes, he's going to face a boxer, but he's not going to face a no-name boxer who's going to beat the hell out of him. Whenever he faces a guy who's going to beat him, it's going to be for a lot of money, and it's going to be a big-time fight. It's going to be when this thing is coming at a climax. This is a business move by Jake Paul, and he's doing something he loves. He clearly loves boxing, and it scratches that competitive itch that he probably does have. But he is the one that is dealing the cards. He's dealing his opponents. He's getting the right types of guys, and he's looking for name fighters who he can absolutely beat. Woodley is someone he can absolutely beat. I hope Woodley beats him. But the difference is Jake has just been investing all of his time into this discipline, whereas all these MMA fighters have invested all of their time being MMA fighters, and it's just a different ballgame.
Yeah, I mean, someone brought up the point of, hey, when's the last time Tyron Woodley won a round?
Mm-hmm. It's been a long time. Yes, when he had the championship around his waist, and that's been a long time. Yeah, so we'll see.
2018, bro.
Oof.
Think about this. Since he retained the title against Darren Till, decision loss against Kamaru Usman, decision loss against Gilbert Burns, fifth round loss against Colby Covington, and then the first round submission loss against Vicente Luque.
Yeah, I mean, for Woodley, we were talking about retirement, and now he's going to be able to have a nice retirement.
Well, I mean, here's the other thing is now that he's doing this deal with Showtime pay-per-view, does this mean Tyron Woodley is Bellator bound at some point? But, or does he make so much money? Who knows? Well, let's just say this. Let's say he beats Jake Paul. Then is the natural progression, he gets Logan Paul next?
Well, I mean, Logan's probably going to lose it. Well, Logan will lose to Mayweather.
Okay, here's my thing about that fight. Do you think Mayweather toys with him for a couple rounds?
Yeah, I think so. I think
before he finishes, because I want to say it's 8 rounds. You know, does he toy with him for like 5 rounds or so before he just says, screw it, I'm done playing with you?
I think it'll be really similar to Floyd's matchup with the kickboxer in Japan that was like an exhibition. I think it'll be just like that. I mean, Floyd's going to destroy this kid. I mean, Floyd's a goat. You know, he's one of the goats of boxing. So I think he can play with his food, absolutely. But I'm sure he's a little pissed off by some of the shenanigans that the Paul brothers have done So I don't know if five rounds might be a little too long for Floyd. I mean, I think he really wants to put him in his place.
Bro, you can't. Logan Paul, Jake Paul, do not play those kind of games with Mayweather. Do not.
Yeah, he's a bad dude.
That's not a smart move. You could do that against Ben Askren. He'll play along with you. You start doing that stuff, and I think that Jake Paul learned a lesson. Don't grab Floyd's hat. Otherwise, you might get dotted in the eye.
Yeah. These people, he will not back down. He's prideful, and he will not. He will get even, and he will. And this is a different ball game. They're in, you know, the Mayweather business, and I'm looking forward to the fight. You know, I'm looking forward to the fight. I'm not going
to
lie.
No, you're looking forward to the circus. Get yourself right. You want to see what fallout happens from this.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is one of those things that if you're at a bar on Sunday watching this fight and it's over, you can't just pay the tab and leave. You got to sit there for about another 30 minutes to see what craziness happens.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I want to see Logan Paul get knocked out, which is just, it's crazy that it switched to where people want to see Logan get knocked out and not Mayweather. You know,
it is crazy,
You know, Mayweather made a living being the guy you paid money to see get knocked out, and it's flipped at this point.
It's crazy to me to think about. You know, I'm somebody that wants quality combat sports. And the sad thing is, in 2021, our biggest fights are likely involving Jake Paul and Logan Paul.
Yeah, it is crazy to say, but here's the thing.
Will more people buy Mayweather, Logan Paul, or Woodley, Jake Paul, then by Conor Poirier 3.
I don't. Oof. How many people bought the last Jake Paul fight?
They say 1.4 million, but I don't buy it.
Yeah, Conor Poirier 3 will be
this
more.
This is my thing. If he really sold that amount of pay-per-views, Thriller's not letting him walk away.
Yeah. I think Conor Poirier does more pay-per-views than both those fights. Now, Floyd Mayweather versus Jake Paul will probably take the cake for the biggest pay-per-view of the year.
I'm glad you brought that up because I saw a quote. I forget what article I was, maybe it was on the ESPN article, and I'm like, oh, man, they are totally setting up Floyd Mayweather, Jake Paul. It is totally that's where this is heading.
Totally. I mean, that might be the end game. And that, to me, that's a big fight. Like, we're talking about Jake Paul's a
huge favorite. Do you hear yourself?
It's true. It's true because Jake Paul on his own, you know, Tyron Woodley is World Toy Champion for the UFC, didn't draw that well as a World Toy Champion. Wasn't a great draw. But Jake is going to elevate him, and they're going to do quite well. Jake, like Floyd, is the guy who elevates his opponent to do a good pay-per-view. When you have two guys who elevate, oh, my gosh, you're in the money. I mean, Poirier isn't even a guy who elevates. Connor's the guy who does the elevating. That's why Connor and Diaz are such a big pay-per-view. So, yeah. I mean, Jake Floyd, that would be the biggest pay-per-view of the year if it happens.
Okay, so I just looked this up. Jake Paul on Instagram, because we all know Instagram is a go-to profile for combat sports. Jake Paul has 15.8 million followers on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Tyron Woodley has 1.7.
You know, that's a big gap. Conor probably has what, like 60 million?
Oh, let's look at Conor McGregor.
Let's see what Conor has. I feel like Conor has a lot.
Conor McGregor has 40 million.
Okay. So, you know, he's in a different ballpark than Mr. Paul. But
it's just crazy to me to think about. When you're talking about, like, when I think about going out on a Sunday night to a bar to watch fights, immediately comes to my mind, WEC.
Why?
Because it was always on Sunday nights.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some of those big Uriah Faber fights.
Oh, yeah, I remember going out watching Uriah, and we'd be at the bar, and yeah. When I think Sunday night MMA fights, WEC is the first thing that comes to my mind.
Man, I miss some of those cards, man. Those are good cards. Those really were. You know, the featherweight, bantamweight division, even when they used to have Condit and Chael. Yeah. And they had Paulo Filho could be a dark side of the cage when he was literally talking to someone outside of the cage. That was insane.
That's a damn good one. By the way, you know, MMA Twitter can be a toxic place at times.
Yeah.
But there was something really cool I saw over the past couple of days, and it was Kurt Hollebaugh, who, of course, fought there at XFC 44. He tweeted out a video where the caption was, "Having the time of my life at XFC 44, living my dream. Another dream of mine was to have my son Zayden Hollebaugh in the back with me and warming me up. Amazing experience. Have to be a part of the XFC. That boy can hold some pads." And the video is of his son holding pads while he's getting warmed up. And I remember talking to Kurt a little earlier this year, where he talked about one of the things about quarantine was, you know, him and his son bonding over martial arts. So I thought it was a cool little moment I saw on Twitter this week.
That's a nice little positive in the toxic. It's not just MMA Twitter that's toxic. I mean, the whole damn thing is toxic. I mean, man, and we get a crazy news story every day. Like, we have this Naomi Osaka story that's just insane, where it's just like, that's just, you just don't want to even comment on it because it's so toxic, where you have, you know, her pulling out of the tournament because of the tournament strong armor for not doing media, but she cited mental health, and it's like, this is just a tough subject that I don't want to have an opinion on. I'm passing. But that's just like a normal day on Twitter. We have these crazy topics every other day that it's just like not good to interact with.
Yeah, it was like the I don't know if you saw the whole LeBron the video from his show on HBO where he's talking about Orlando, and like if you just go to the comments. By the way, the Orlando mayor responded. I saw some people going, "Bro, you were not in Orlando. You were at Disney. That is not Orlando."
Yeah, yeah, it's a different thing. Yeah. I mean, that's no bueno. Yeah.
Sometimes when there's stuff like that, and whether it's, you know, it could be MMA related, I just click on the tweet. I just look at the comments just to see. Like, there was a story yesterday. Chuck Liddell said something about Jake Paul, and I'm like, oh man, let me just look at the comments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're gonna have some funny tweets. Randomly, there'll be a political argument, no matter what. You know, it could be Chuck Liddell posting a picture of what he had for breakfast, and we'll get some type of political diatribe in the replies. We'll have all kinds of craziness, but I do appreciate the funny memes. There's always a good, you know, five or six funny tweets that are there that make it worth it when you get in the nasty junkyard that is Twitter replies.
Bro, sometimes you just got to respond, you know, quote the tweet with a GIF. That's sometimes you just got to do that.
Yeah, yeah. GIFs are the nice part of Twitter.
That's, do you call it GIF or GIF? I'm a GIF guy.
GIF.
Yeah,
I'm anyway, a GIF. Yeah, if you call it GIF, you should just stop. You just, no, it's not GIF. No one says GIF. It's a GIF.
Who does, yeah, say GIF?
The people who are old. That ages you tremendously. If you say GIF, you just are too old for the internet. Unplug your device, go outside, and live a better life.
By the way, PFL's back next week. Clarissa Shields, MMA debut. I'm definitely interested in that one. I saw yesterday, I looked at it, she has opened up as a 5-1 betting favorite.
Well, I think she's probably going to kick some ass. That's what PFL wants. And yeah, I'm excited for the return of PFL. I saw that the Kayla Harrison got her regular season finale bout booked against Cindy Dandewitt. I'm pretty hyped, man. I'm pretty hyped for PFL. I'm excited for the postseason. But I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how Clarissa Shields performs. You know, obviously she's a big favorite, but we have seen fighters, when they make that transition, not do it well. We've seen some great fighters do well, but also the flip side is it doesn't go according to plan.
Here's my complaint about PFL. As you look at these, you know, we're now getting to the second part of the regular season. To me, their matchmaking seems to be they're trying to set up what fighters get to the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems. By the way, the one thing about the Kayla card that stuck out to me is that the other three fights on the main card are all the men's heavyweight fights.
Yeah, which is a problem because it's like you got to build someone up to be that challenger, you know, to make things interesting.
I don't know who they build up to get people intrigued about who has a chance to beat Kayla Harrison.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, when you look at that lineup, there isn't a single fighter I think does.
Look, Kayla Harrison, you just need to keep cashing them checks.
Yeah, those are big checks, you know, to go out there and win that tournament in a field where you are clearly the favorite, both because of your, you know, your athleticism, your raw talent, and the size.
I mean, look,
it's a great spot for her.
She's a free agent after this season. It's going to be interesting to see how free agency plays out for her, because whether she goes to Bellator or the UFC, both those organizations are going to tell her, you're fighting at 145 pounds. But if I'm the UFC, what do you do?
Well, I think you put her against Nunez.
Question is, do they fight each other? They're training partners. I guess would.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great point. I mean, she might just do Bellator by then.
There's more 45ers in Bellator, but this is my sense of it, that she wants to be known as the greatest women's fighter of all time. Well,
she does. There's only one fighter she has to go through, and that's her training partner.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could see her going to Bellator and taking the Cyborg fight. I mean, that to me is a pretty big deal right there.
I think Bellator needs that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. Obviously Cyborg's talked about she wants to fight Kat Zingano next. But outside of that, I'm like, what fight can Bellator make that intrigues people?
Yeah.
I mean, Cyborg, look, you know, to me, she's the second best female fighter of all time behind Amanda Nunes. But it's definitely at that point that I'm like, what gets me excited outside of, hey, this is one of the best to ever do it, to watch her fight? Because, I mean, look, I think that the Chris Cyborg you're seeing now is better than the Chris Cyborg we saw in the UFC.
Especially the tail end and how she performed, definitely. But yes, when it comes to which fight, I mean, there's really only one realistic fight, and it's Bellator grabbing the bag and dropping it for Kayla Harrison. That's the Cyborg fight that's going to generate a huge number. I mean, that's the type of fight. Harrison and Cyborg is something you can put on pay-per-view if you're Bellator, me. You don't think so?
You put it on CBS.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's a big time.
I think it's only a matter of time before Bellator does a show on CBS. That's just my, yeah. I mean, no inside information. It's just my personal belief. I think it's a matter of time, but well, I think it's about finding the right fight to put on there.
Yeah, that fight would be the right fight. That fight is going to get mainstream attention. And, you know,
I wonder with Chris Cyborg, I wonder what her end game is. How much longer does she want to do this?
I don't know. I mean, she's been doing it for a long time, man. I mean, most of the contemporaries she came up with have been retired for a long period of time. And it's insane to think that she's still on top of the game. I mean, she's your number two. She's my number three of all time. But the thing is, the way she's performing, I feel like she can still perform at this level as a champion for 2 to 4 more years.
Yeah.
But she knows her body.
It's just unfortunate as fight fans that we'll never be able to see a rematch between her and Nunez to see if it would play out differently.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. I agree with you. There's no chance that happened. I would, you know, 0% chance.
Like every time I hear someone in her camp mention about co-promotion, I'm like, fellas, like,
UFC not co-promoting Bellator.
I'm like, you're living in a fantasy world if you think that's going to happen. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, you see my co-promote with, like, the NFL. I don't know what the hell they would do together, but they're not co-promote. They're not going down to another MMA organization and doing that.
No, it'll never happen.
Yeah.
That's like, anytime I hear people, like, and there's times, like, in a press conference, you hear people bring up Scott Coker. I'm like, why? Why are you bringing this up? It's complete fantasy land.
Yeah, that's what they're living in, if they're thinking that's even a... in the realm of possibility.
Yeah. It's like me thinking the Orlando Magic are going to win the NBA Finals next year. It's complete fantasy land. It'll never happen.
Yeah, you can say the same for my sports teams, too. You can say it's the same for my Rockets as well, or my Texas Rangers, or my Houston Texans. Although, at least your Tampa Bay Buccaneers did win the title, so congratulations.
We're on the number two. By the way, today marks 100 days till the start of the NFL regular season, Bucks-Cowboys here in Tampa.
I'm counting down the days, man. Is that the first game of the year?
Yeah, Thursday night, September 9th.
I'm excited. I mean, I'm not excited for the Texans. I mean, it's really bad. It's a really bad situation in Houston on many different levels. But I am excited for the NFL season. I'm excited to see the new quarterbacks play. I'm excited to see. I hope Joe Burrow returns healthy. I hope Dak Prescott returns healthy. I'm interested to see what the hell happens to Aaron Rodgers, where Julio Jones goes. I'm excited for the NFL season, man. And I'm excited for college football with fans in the stands. Let's get it going.
Yeah, I think we're going to go to FSU Notre Dame Labor Day weekend up in Tallahassee. So that should be a fun weekend.
Oh, hell yeah, man. I mean, this pandemic.
I mean, Knowles, we suck, but, yeah. But I'll be there.
No, yeah, you'll be drunk, though, and you'll enjoy your time. What do you,
I don't know what you're talking about. You're creating a false narrative over there.
Man, before that first quarter goes, you're going to be gone.
It is a night game, so yeah, you might very well be
gone. I mean, dude, we went a whole year without college football, you know, that type of environment, that, like, where everyone's just comfortable. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, we're transitioning.
I will tell you, being at Universal Studios over the weekend, comfortable, I think, is the way I would describe people.
Yeah. Yeah, we're slowly getting back to, oh, wait, I don't need to feel like I'm doing something wrong and not wearing my mask. Like, it's still taking a while. We're still in the process, but we're getting back to
normal. I'm telling you, every time, like, I go to a grocery store and I see someone without a mask on, I do a double take. I'm like, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, we're getting back to normal life, you know, and I'm damn excited about it.
Yeah, I am with you there. Of course, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. If you do not do that, like, share, let your friends know. Really do appreciate that. Of course, be sure to check out our presenting sponsor, Roman. Go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport to get $15 off your first month of treatment. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. So that's going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out 2 times a week. Myself and Daniel here on Wednesdays, and then the interview edition on Sunday, which I'm already lining up a couple interviews over there, so be on the lookout for that. So that's going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on your favorite podcasting platform and RadioInfluence.com.